Well, with all of that, I'd like to go ahead and introduce tonight's panel. And they're going to be speaking to us tonight about steps 1 and 2. And they will each be given time to speak, and then we will have time for questions. So our speakers this evening are, we're being flexible here. We're going to start with Jenny, who is the chair for Region 2. And she's
7.
Where did I say 2? Well, 7, 2. Oh, that's right. 2 is California. She's from New Jersey. Central New Jersey, even. So Jenny will speak first. And we have our own Region 3 chair, Brenda. She's going to speak in a second. And then Annette, who has joined us all the way from Minnesota, is going to speak there. So.
You want me to go ahead?
I do.
I'll pull my microphone over then. Hello and good evening. I'm Jenny, abstinent compulsive overeater and carbs addict from, as I just told you, Central Jersey. To be exact, Middletown. Just because I can say it. Hello. It's so good to be here and so good to see all of you. Okay, so I'm going to read my directions, which is, okay, so I came into program in 1985. I had about 45 pounds to lose at that time. And I had 2 children abstinently. I'm just putting my timer on. And I thought things were good. After my second child, I decided that maybe other people could do some of those things that I was doing. Somebody else could sponsor more people. Somebody else can speak at meetings. And I stopped calling my sponsor. That was definitely a key. I went on vacation with my family and went out back into the food for 8 years. Totally forgot OA. So in June of 2006, thank you, God, I came back. Actually, what happened is I have a 12-step program person in my house, and he left my For Today book out on the counter. He swears to this day that he didn't do it. God love him. So anyway, when I found the book, it was like, oh, yeah, I remember this. But it's amazing because the total memory lapse of OA is real. And that's what happens when I get into the sugar and the carbs. Totally done. So I went online. Thank God there were email loops at that point in 2006. Joined a couple of the email loops, the virtual world. And I found some meetings in my area. I had just moved a few years prior. And I started going to meetings. I got a sponsor right away. And at that point, I knew if I wanted to survive, I needed to do what works for other people. So the next year, I lost over 100 pounds because that 45 that I had originally lost, I definitely got it back with interest. So I got into the program. I started sponsoring. I started working with a sponsor. I did everything that I needed to do because at this point I understood that nobody else could do it for me. So, step 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. And the principle to that is honesty. My problem there, and that is my problem. Step 1 is my problem. The problem is I was a liar. And I thought that I could do it myself. There would be something wrong with me if I needed help to do this. So I floundered for a while, but thank God my sponsor was very patient and got me working. The doctor's opinion. Well, there's my story right there. I was a yo-yo dieter, and something would always happen. There was no question. I was back into the food. Somebody would make a comment, oh, well, you can have one. You lost so much weight. Yeah, right. You know, and that was the liar believing it. So I love these flags because step 1 is all about surrendering and accepting. So, yes, I accepted this, but I'm going to go over a little bit of how I did it. The doctor's opinion, that helped, because I never understood what the phenomenon of cravings was all about. I thought I was weak. And I always thought I could just have one. What's wrong with just one? Well, that was how every one of my diets ended, with just one. And then, you know, it was like, oh, how did that happen? None of my clothes fit me. You know, the whole thing. It happened overnight. And that was exactly how it happened. Craziness, because no matter what my intention was, once I got into the food, that was the end. So, let's see. The mental twist. Now, the mental twist happens even today. I get weighed once a month. And before I get on that scale once a month, the thoughts come to me like, okay, if I lost weight or if I gained weight, if, you know, this happened or that happened. My sponsor always reminds me, and when I first came back from my relapse, she told me, okay, so you stepped on the scale 6 times today. You know, what difference did it make? And then she told me something that I just remember for always. If you're going to have your scale, your bathroom scale, as your God, please bow down to it every morning before you step on it. That really got me, because that was really true. The food and my scale were my God. And it was not a good thing. So I admitted I was powerless, and I was hoping that I could get some help. So, step one is the problem. Step two is the solution. I'm a Catholic schoolgirl. That's not going to be a problem for me. Well, yeah, it was a major problem for me because I didn't think that God had time for my little problem with food. So through a program, I had to find a way to connect with a higher power that cares about me. And everything, all my conception of my higher power did not matter, because it wasn't working. So that's what I love about this program, that is that it teaches me, what kind of a God are you interested in? You know, and my sponsor had described to me, well, when she first started, her God was kind of like this big-bosomed older woman like grandma that she could hug and love. And I thought, okay, well, that's nice. I couldn't do a father figure because it wasn't working for me from the church and the Catholic school and all that stuff. So I thought, okay, let me just try that. I'll try this nice old woman, because I thought of my grandma. And in time, it changed. But what was important for me was that I was coming to believe. And that, did I say the principle is hope for the second, for step two? And that's the difference, is before I did not have hope because I kept yo-yo dieting. I kept failing, and it wasn't working for me. So as I got deeper into the program and, you know, reading the literature and understanding that this really was a disease, and if I thought that running to the store every other day getting 2 pounds of chocolate was normal, there was an issue to be had there. So, you know, so this program, without question, saves my life. Because, yeah, I am a compulsive overeater. I'm a food junkie. And the difference is not that I am weak or that I am thoughtless or that I like chocolate too much. The problem is that I'm an addict. I am a junkie. And the food that I don't eat, I call my alcoholic food. Because like an alcoholic, if I have one, it's not going to stop. And I will continue right into that. So, you know, I never feel like I'm deprived, because for me, when I can go to a family party, oh, I should tell you, I am half Irish and half Italian. The food is Italian. And junk food was it. I mean, my sister to this day makes chocolate and bakes and all of that. And I never understood why, looking back, why no one said it. No one ever said anything to me at the holiday parties when I sat at the end of the table where the tray was. Like this. I couldn't tell you who was at the party. I couldn't tell you what anybody talked about. But I could tell you what was on that plate. And that was it. I mean, she laughs at me to this day now because in recovery, she makes half of what she used to make. It was me. Ooh, well, you know, save money on the items. It was funny. How much time do I have? Let's just look. All right, I got plenty of time. Good. All right. So, you know, for me, accepting a higher power and help from that higher power is amazing because through this program, I have learned that I might be powerless. I am powerless over the food, but I'm not helpless and definitely not hopeless. Because, why? Because step two, I found a higher power that can help me. And it works every time. I have a connection with my higher power like I never did in those 13 years of Catholic school. Because now I have a loving higher power who helps me in everything that I do. The region chairs and the board of trustees were in Albuquerque 3 weeks ago, and I was sick as a dog. And my MO before program was to feel sorry for myself. But instead, I took it as a signal that I need to slow down. And I did what I needed to, and we had a great time. It was a very productive week. And then I went home, and my antibiotics ran out, and I got an explosive sinus infection, learning that my doctor didn't give me the right strength. Well, again, that's acceptance. I didn't have to eat over it. I was definitely a person who would eat to medicate myself. Not that that would ever work, but it might have worked for the 2 seconds it was in my mouth. Well, guess what? I went to the doctors, and I actually got the right antibiotic, and it took a couple, I guess it took 6 days, but I finally got better. Had another medical incident, which scared the bejesus out of me. But you know something? This program works because every day I talk to my higher power. And I know that I can get through whatever he hands to me. This program just totally amazes me when things happen as they do. Because sometimes I wonder, like, what? How in the hell did that happen? You know, like, that can't be right. We had a very busy schedule, the region chairs today. Thank you. And we managed to get everything done so that we could be in on your forum, which was really good. I was really happy that we were able to do that. And we got our work done. And we have many other things that we have planned. So, you know, the bottom line is, though, is that I'm abstinent today. I work the 12 steps. I live by the traditions. And I wouldn't be here if I didn't work the program because I never, my first meeting, I said to the woman who ended up being my sponsor, there's no way in hell you're ever going to get me to speak in front of people. Ooh, no way. Well, hello. So thank you very much for letting me share. And I'm glad you all made it. And I'm glad everybody finally got dinner. Thank you so much.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Jenny, for going first. I was actually supposed to go first, and I just rushed in from supper. So my name is Brenda. I'm a food addict, and I'm about to have to put my money where my mouth is because today when Carrie came in to tell us when we were speaking, I just said, you know, if we've been in program long enough, and if we can't just speak off the cuff for 12 minutes, then there's something wrong. And so I'm about to... Because I planned on having a little time to prepare and collect my thoughts. So I can definitely speak for 12 minutes, and the people at my home group can tell you that, the three of us as we sit together. I don't know how coherent it'll be, but I want to tell you that I came into OA in 1994, And what had happened is in a few short years, I had doubled my weight. I had gained 165 pounds. And I was at 335 pounds, and I came into OA in San Angelo, Texas. And started working the steps with some ladies there. And got a measure of sanity and lost in less than a year half the body weight. So I can remember because I was at 167 and a half pounds and I had lost 167 and a half pounds. And the obsession had been lifted. As a side note, I just want to say that, you know, I'm Region 3 chair now. But back then, my very first service duty was that we had the trustee who was at the time, I guess it was in 95, the trustee was coming in from out of town. And he wanted to go to church on Sunday, and so I volunteered to take him to church and then to lunch on Sunday. So I want to tell you that that person was Mike Kay. That was my very first. So be careful if you're rubbing up against him because you'll catch it. Now, so I was in OA for a few years, until 1998. And what happened was I was working on my master's thesis and got too busy to go to meetings. And that was the nail in the coffin. And I went back out. And from 1994 until I crawled back in the rooms in 2005, I had gained back that 167 and a half pounds and more on top of that. So I was at a new high weight of over 400 pounds. In November 29, 2005, when I finally made my way back to Overeaters Anonymous. It was a very small little meeting. There was one woman who kept going to that meeting every week, whether anyone showed or not, and opening the doors and being there. And so, and that woman saved my life. And so if you're the person who is going to a meeting and sometimes you're there by yourself, know that someday somebody like me might walk in and you may be the person that saves their life. And so what happened is I was so, you know, step one says powerless over food. My life is unmanageable. I have a friend in program and he switches that around and he says, I am powerless over life and my food is unmanageable. And, you know, food is not my problem. Food is my solution. My problem is I don't know how to face life as it comes at me. And so my knee-jerk solution for whatever reason, and I don't have to expend life energy trying to figure out why, but my solution is to reach for the food for whatever reason. And so I was really into the food, and I did not know what recovery. You know, I said the first time I came in, I got a sponsor really quick, started working the steps really quick, I got on a food plan, and lost the weight really quick. I didn't know what recovery would look like. I did not know if recovery was possible for me again, but I knew that I was at that jumping off place that the big book talks about. I couldn't stay where I couldn't imagine living life as I was, eating all that food, but I couldn't imagine life worth living without the food. And so I had no idea what recovery would look like. Now, I want to say right here that I heard a saying once that recovery is like driving a car at night. You can only see as far as your headlights shine, but you can make the whole trip only seeing as far as your headlights shine. And this program has taught me a wonderful way to live. I can live one day at a time. And I don't have to have any certainties and for sures about what's going to happen tomorrow, the next day, or whatever. I can just live this day. Well, I started just going to meetings. One meeting a week. And it was me and this other woman and my husband at the time, who I had met in OA the first time around. And we would go to meetings week after week, but I wasn't doing much more than that. What happened was I went to a region convention and assembly. It was held in San Antonio and weekend in March 2006. And, you know, what do you do when you're at a OA convention? But, you know, you go out for some fast food. And so that's what me and my husband my binge buddy. That's what he and I did. We went through a drive-thru, and the scene played out between us like it had thousands of times before. He ordered his food, and he turned to me and asked, "What will you have?" And to his surprise and my own, I said, "I'm not going to have anything. I'll just have a diet soda." I didn't plan to say that. I didn't plan that to happen. I count my abstinence from that moment right there. And let me explain. That was the middle of the day. That was March 11th of 2006. And what that was is that was a moment when I surrendered the food for that moment. Before then, I was in diet mentality. I mean, diet mentality looks like I'm going to start my diet on Monday. And then when I start my diet on Monday, I already have in my mind, if I eat X, Y, and Z, eat this certain way, how much weight I'm going to have lost. And then I try to get through Monday, but when I can't make it through Monday, and I was like, well, to hell with it. I'm going to eat everything I can all day Monday, and then I'll start again tomorrow, because tomorrow's a magic day. And the same thing happens the next day. And then by the time it's happened again and Wednesday comes along, well, it's like, well, heck with it. You know, this day is blown. This week is blown. I'll just go ahead and eat all my favorite binge foods until Monday comes. And then Monday is the magical day. And the thing is that goes on months. And then by the time it's in the middle of the month, it's like, well, to heck with it. I'll eat, in first of the month. And then when it gets toward the end of the year, it's like, well, to heck with it. The holidays are coming up. I'll eat everything I can eat. And then January 1st is the magical day. That is the mentality of dieting for me. And the thing is years of my life melted away with that mentality. What made that moment in that drive-thru in San Antonio, Texas different is there was no weight to be lost that day. It was not, okay, if I'm good, I might could lose half a pound today. There was none of that. There was no weight to be lost. It was just a moment of, okay, let's surrender. It was just a moment of, okay, for this moment, I'm going to trust God and not eat. And what happened was, I'm not going to tell you that I then was struck abstinent and started getting skinny immediately. That is not what happened. What happened was those moments of surrender came more frequently. And over time, those moments started connecting with each other until it became a continuous surrender of food for me. And that's not what recovery looked like the first time I was in. I had no plan for this. And in fact, I didn't really even know that this is how this all happened. Let's see how my time's doing. I didn't even know this is all how this happened. It wasn't until in January of, late in the year of 2011, World Service Office had given out a call for people to write their stories. And my sponsor had encouraged me, write your story. It was actually a friend who lived in California. And so I was writing my story. And I went back to my sponsor and asked her, is this how this happened? And she verified, yes, this is how this happened. And I asked my husband, Sam, is this how this happened? Yes. So I didn't have a blueprint of how this was all this was going to happen. But what happened was it was a gradual surrender of food. Because, like I said, food is my solution. And the thing is I need time working those steps and let them become my new solution. And then I can surrender more and more of the food. And I know that's not how everyone's abstinence works and recovery works, but I'm just telling you from my experience, that's what happened. The more I worked the steps, the more I could let go of the food. And when I came back from San Antonio, I got the sponsor and I started working the other lady at the meeting. She hadn't lost. I needed to lose 200 pounds plus. She hadn't lost that kind of weight, but she was the person there. So another important lesson I've learned in this program is that I need to try to help accept the help that's available, not the help that I think my ideal of help, what help is available. And she started helping me, and she kept my focus on the steps. We did not talk about food. And what would happen is I would pray about what would be the next step. Before I ever changed my food plan, I would start praying for willingness, whatever would happen next. And what happened was, I can be more specific at some point if someone wants to ask me how it occurred, but it was a gradual surrender of food until on June 25th of 2007. So I practiced working the steps on my life, on my life situation, from March of 2006 all the way to June of 2007 when I became willing, for financial reasons actually, to go on a food plan, not of my creation. And it was after after June of 2007 that most of my physical recovery has come. I'm running out of time. So what I can tell you is that step two, okay, so there's a lot of surrender in step one for me. Step two, the came to believe, that is a process. If I look at the verbs and the steps, they're like an action that I can, it's a definable, made amends, okay? I can mark when I make amends. But when I come to believe, what that is for me is that is the development of an experience for me. And I had to have time walking through fear. But first, being honest about the fact that I was scared as hell of whatever was coming at me in life at that time. And I had to be honest. And you know, it says there in How It Works in the Big Book that rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not or cannot recover are those who will, whatever, be completely honest. So honesty. I have to get honest about what's true inside my gut. And so I have to be honest. I have to look at when I'm afraid. And then I have to be willing to walk through fear without reaching for food. And when I do that enough time, what I realize is that it's going to be okay. And sometimes okay doesn't look like what I think okay is going to look like, but that the beauty of this program is that I get I'm looking at my time. But let me just finish my thought. The beauty of this program is that I have tools that help me get okay with what okay is going to be, and so I'm really grateful to be here tonight. And just to plug one thing I've done the entire time, for years, the one thing that I have done without fail is I have done morning quiet time every morning, and that is a practice of the foundation of this program, the first three steps. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Annette, grateful, abstinent, compulsive overeater. And I use notes. It helps me stay track of my time. I've been in OA for nearly 30 years. And actually, I keep saying nearly. It's actually 30 years now. And it's the 30 years that I've stayed. There was a couple other attempts, but that they didn't work out. But I have been abstinent for over 13 of that. So I took what I like to call the family circus way around to my recovery. So those of you who don't know Family Circus, one of the characters is a little boy named Billy, and when he's sent on an errand, he's like, you know, climbing the trees and under the chair and playing in the pool and petting the cat and all of those kinds of things. So that was my way of doing it. I'm down about 80 pounds from my high weight and have maintained this for over 12 years. I consider myself a run-of-the-mill compulsive overeater. My stories are no worse than anybody. Certainly I've heard worse and I've heard less. I don't even try to compare anymore. I try to identify. If anybody did the math, you will know that it took me nearly 17 years to find my recovery. Prior to that, I had periods of abstinence, on-again, off-again abstinence. They could range from 5 minutes to, maybe not even that, 5 minutes to like 6 months. And when I'd string some periods of time together where I felt like, okay, I got it now, I would do service beyond the group level, because that's what I was told. You have to do service. You have to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. And I didn't think about the ones in the room, but I wondered where they all were that I was supposed to carry the message to, so I figured I better go do service and find out. And I enjoyed it, too. anyways, so it took me almost 17 years, like I said, but those years weren't lost because I was coming to meetings consistently. I had sponsors. I was working the steps. Obviously not all the time because I wouldn't have been in relapse if I had been. But I was doing service. I was doing things, and everything that I had been gathering and learning, it was like a squirrel gathering nuts for the winter. You know, I had all these recovery gems that were there for me to use when I found my recovery. So I'll tell you, you know, I'm speaking again Sunday morning, so I'll tell you the story of my miracle on Sunday morning so that I can get on to the topic here now. Anyways, I broke it out to step one and step two, and I'll read the step again. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now, on some level, I knew I was a compulsive eater before there was such a thing. I knew that I ate like alcoholics drank in that I couldn't stop when I started. Nobody was more surprised than me when I read about it in Dear Abby that, oh, there's a program for that. But I didn't fully understand the implications of that. I didn't even understand the positive implication at that point is that we don't have to be ashamed anymore. It tells us that in our OA at 12 and 12. It's an illness that cannot be controlled by willpower. None of us have decided to have this disorder any more than we could have decided to have any other disease. We can now cease blaming ourselves and others for our compulsive eating. The challenge that I didn't understand, that I didn't realize, is that understanding that I was a compulsive overeater meant there were things that I had to change about my eating, that it wasn't going to be magic and handed to me on a platter. And so I just didn't get. And the reason I bring that up is because that was part of my story, is I wasn't willing to do what I needed to do, and I wasn't even willing to acknowledge within myself what I needed to do to be abstinent. And so I didn't get the full value of it. That was about the powerlessness over food. Life had become unmanageable. Did I start this? No, I didn't. Okay. Well, we're going to start it now and hope for the best.
Are you timing? Oh, I thought so. Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay. Carry on. Okay. Anyways, the unmanageability factor, it was easy to see. I could tell my life was unmanageable. All I had to look at my home and see the state of the household. It was just chaos, and I had no ability to do anything about it. But I didn't immediately see the connection of that unmanageability to the eating. I didn't get that. I used to think I ate because I liked food, and there was something wrong with my stop button that I couldn't stop. And then a passage, one of my favorite passage from step one in our book, we ate to sate the fears, the anxieties, the angers, the disappointments. We ate to escape the pressures of the problems of the boredom of everyday life. We procrastinated, we hid, and we ate. And when I read that, I was like, it just so resonated with me. And that ties the two together for me for so very beautifully that there's a connection between the two. Moving on to step two. Step two came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I find it interesting that our OA 12 and 12 addresses the word sanity first. I decided that must be because when we look at that word sanity and go, oh, no, this is not me. I'm not insane. You know, I've got things going on here. You know, I've got a job. I can do these things. I'm not insane. One of the things about sanity and insanity is that sanity is just like insanity is doing the same thing over. I'm sorry, that's the wrong one. Insanity is, yes, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Well, you know, she told my story about all the lies about Mondays and, you know, all the days of the week and all the lies we tell ourselves about that. So that was certainly part of that for me, too. I did get the insanity with the food. That was clear to me pretty quickly. What I did not understand was that... the insanity with life, pardon me. that piece was a little bit harder for me to grasp. I was still about the food at this point. And then again, like I said, the definition of sanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. That helped me to understand that that applies to my life as well. And then, okay. The second part of that is, the first part of the question, or the step is, came to believe that a power greater than myself, and I'm going to stop at that point. I was ambivalent on the subject of God, but I knew I needed to find such a power. I knew I needed to be able to do that. And I had some quotes here, but in the interest of time, I'm just going to say I listed 5 different quotes from the Big Book that came to my rescue, starting with Bill's story and in the chapter We Agnostics. When I came to OA, I was like, I don't know if there's a God, you know, but if he is, I figured all I had to do was live right and I'd be safe either way. But now I had to have a power greater than myself. So I had to act as if, and that was the key for me. Act as if that we have that power already. And that's in our OA literature too, that we can act as if that we already have that power. And that's what I did. So it was like, I'm in the grocery store. Okay, God, I don't know if you're there, but these smells are way more than I can handle right now. Just help me get through here. Don't let me look at any food, just no food, and because I was going for coffee. And I was going through, and literally my eyes were on T-shirts, greeting cards, all the things that weren't food. So, you know, you have to start taking these things seriously after a point when you keep having these experiences. And then I'd like to focus on the word could contain in this step. Because that was an important piece to me. In fact, I thought it was in the AA literature, and I realized it was not. It was just because it's in the step. The word could is what it made it possible for me to get my start. And that was because I interpreted to mean that, I've lost my place here. I had it worded so very nicely. Anyways, basically, I could admit, I could say I had come to believe, I was willing to believe that there might be a power greater than myself who maybe could restore me to sanity. I didn't say I was buying it. I didn't have that belief. I just knew, and that was my step two. That was my entrance. And I still have very few beliefs when it comes to God. People ask me what my image of God is. I don't have one, but I have a whole lot of faith. And that's what I needed for this program, is to have a higher power that I can count on. And then there was one little thing about the word restore that I really appreciated too. And I think a reading from our Voices of Recovery came to me. And maybe some of you have read this one, where a woman talks about going into an art shop. And she is just taken with this person who's restoring a painting. And she says, the image stayed with me. And the next day, as I was doing my early morning lotion and moisturizer routines, it occurred to me that it was my higher power's artistic creation. My higher power was restoring me through my step work with the same care and knowledge that the artist used to restore her painting in the gallery. My entire step two task was to believe that I too could be restored through my care tasks, be they writing, going to meetings, taking quiet time, or phone time with my sponsor, and be a participant in this great restoration work. And that was helpful to me, because when I heard the word restore me to sanity, I was like, did I ever have any? I've been eating compulsively for a lot of years. You know, I kind of don't remember much beyond being interested in the food. And so how could I have had any sanity? But when I think about it, in terms of my higher power being his creation, he's restoring me to what he knows who I really am. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you all very much. We are going to Okay, it's 8:17. And I had intended to give us a small break, but I'm thinking since we started late, we might just go ahead and keep going. So now it's time for questions. We're going to have about 15 minutes to ask questions of the panel. So, Jim, do you have the microphone?
Yep.
Okay. So please wait until Jim brings the microphone to you before you ask a question. So if you could just, if you have a question and no one else is standing up, if you can stand up so he can see that you want to ask a question. Yes. Please. And then I'm sorry, your name?
Pauline.
When Pauline finishes her question and it has been answered, then the next person can go ahead and stand. So... Oh, there's been gremlins in the room. I know they straightened that out once already tonight.
My name is Pauline. I'm from Galveston, Texas. I'm a compulsive overeater in recovery. My question is directed towards Virginia, but I'd like to hear from the other panelists as well, if they choose. And that was to hear your concept of your higher power today, because at the beginning of your... as part of your share, I understood that you adopted an image of a higher power as a motherly female figure, and then later in your share, you casually referred to your higher power as he.
Yes.
So I thought that was very interesting, and I would like to see maybe or hear the evolution of that.
Okay. Basically, it took time, but yes, I do consider the God of my understanding a he. That's what I call, you know, I guess through 12 steps through the program, we refer to God as the God of my understanding and as he. I have no problem doing that. I guess for me, it was just coming to believe that there was something there. So as, you know, as my recovery progressed and as I worked the steps and learned the traditions, that they weren't just a business thing, you know, I came to understand and realize that not only is the God of my understanding, and yeah, I do consider him a him, I also understand that he is there for me for everything. I always say I take him on vacation. He's here with me now. He sat in the middle seat. you know, but the bottom line is for me is that, yes, it took time because I didn't have a belief before that I was important enough for the God that I was growing up with. So with my sponsor, I think that that helped with the loving woman. But it progressed just naturally for me as I continued with the steps.
Okay. I came into the program with some religious training, Christian background, small town. Just to make it short, 2013, there was a situation that happened in my life that, well, okay, I'll just say, I was dating a guy, and out of the blue, his son committed suicide. And the guy and I had just broken up, and on Thursday and then Sunday, I got the information that his son committed suicide. And what happened was I was already feeling hole in the soul, and I had been in the program for 7 years then. But I was feeling whole in the soul. And at one point, and this was even before the kid's suicide, I was standing in my sponsor's kitchen, and he asked how I was doing, and I said, okay. And so he was actually drying some dishes, and he put down his dish towel and leaned against the stove, and we had the most spiritual conversation I've ever had in my life. And I said, what am I not doing? I'm feeling this hole in the soul, you know, this aloneness, not loneliness, mind you, I'm saying aloneness. What am I not doing? And he said, and I don't think he knew what he was saying to me,
But he said something that turned everything around for me. And he said, you're probably just going to have to learn to live with that. And that option had never occurred to me. And all of a sudden, the universe, and that's what I call God, by the way. I use God or higher power when just so that the language translates. But personally, I call it universe. And the universe provided a trail of breadcrumbs, and I did some math on the subject. It's like knowing the answer doesn't count. You have to do the math, and I did the math, and I've got the journals to prove it. On page 55 in the big book, it says over and over again, I love that page in the big book because it says, look inside, look deep inside, look deep inside, and lots of self-reflection. And I have a concept of a power greater than myself that sorts things out, and it's amazing how things sort out. But I call universe, and there's no human characteristics, so to speak, or whatever. So that's been the last few years. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would say I had religious upbringing to a point, and I had gotten turned off by some things that had happened with church and had lost interest in the whole thing. But I felt like I always wanted something more. I knew there was something missing. I was like in a Bible study for a while, but I just couldn't connect that with that type of thing. So when I needed a power greater than myself and was experimenting with it, my first concept was a loving resource, benevolent resource that I could go to with whatever was going on in my world, and that really helped me. Now I usually refer to the God as I don't understand him, her, or it. I allow for my higher power to be whatever it is or isn't. I have a lot of visuals that I use to help me with the whole higher power question. One of them, my favorite, is the jigsaw puzzle picture of God. And I have this feeling that we all have our own piece or pieces of that puzzle. And our higher power in our minds is the piece that we have. And our higher power is just happier as heck with that because we have a higher power and we're relating to him, her, or it. And so I think if we put all the pieces together, we'd probably get what God really is. But I don't have a need to do that. Thank you.
So as we were up here and listening to our speakers talk about the 12 steps, I thought maybe we could say the 12 steps together. I know it's kind of late doing that. Maybe we should start off with that later. But so if you would join me, for those of you who wish. Step one. We had admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves would restore us to sanity. Three. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you. So if you all go ahead and stand up and grab the hand of the person who is next to you.
Okay.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.